Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to yet another Shoot the Defence World Cup review on FNX, brought to you by The Life of A. I'm your host, Stel, and my two special guests this evening are our friends. I didn't know this until literally about 5 minutes ago. It's the returning Ossie Sankofa and Steve Cabot. Gentlemen, great to have you guys back on. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
You've been to Russia. May I ask why, or is that a bit personal?
No. The game.
Okay.
Really support England, and yeah, that was it.
Nice.
Taking a few sacks.
Brilliant.
What's the trip?
Were the band loud?
I didn't think the stadium I was at. It was a decent stadium. Decent suspects. One of the new ones actually, but it wasn't packed. There was, I would say, there's more Tunisian fans there than England fans. More Russian fans. I think a lot of the English fans have come and gone on the same day. Not a lot of stayed, stuck around, to say, they've been in for a little holiday or whatever. I think they've been in for like the game and gone out the same day.
Okay. Excellent. Ossie, great to have you back on, mate. How you doing?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm good. I've had a long day, but it's been made sweeter by speaking to my old friend Cabs, and thank you again for inviting me to speak.
Oh, anytime, mate. Anytime. It's been great to have you both back on. Right, let's begin with England and Group G. It was an emphatic win over Panama. Harry Kane was the hat-trick hero as the three Lions disposed of their Central American opponents with ease, really. Steve, I guess you can only really beat who's in front of you, mate, and England obviously did that. It seemed to me like a testimonial game. What did you think?
Yeah, I didn't think England played that well, really. Obviously they didn't have to. They were clinical when they needed to be. They got the goals at the right times. The emphatic scoreline suggests that they played really well, really. But as we know, that's not always the case in football. The scoreline doesn't always tell you how the game went. But of course, England did deserve to win the game. I'm glad Panama got their consolation goal, and what a goal it was as well. It's not an easy finish. It's great for confidence. People say it's only Panama we play, but at the end of the day, you can close in front of you and, to score six goals, I think that's England's biggest ever win margin at World Cup. Reaps well for confidence and for the next game. It shows that we've got goals in our team. It's not only Harry Kane that can score a goal, even though he got his hat trick. That makes him top goal scorer. He's on five. Just Lingard did well, got forward. Sterling could have had a couple. John Stones has got two. Maguire's a good header of the ball, so yeah, we're dangerous from all over the park, really, it seems. So hopefully long may that continue.
That's right, mate. I'm going to ask this question to both of you, actually, because you guys have played at the highest level. What do you make of the camaraderie in the England camp? Because for me, it seems stronger than it's been for a long time, maybe since Euro 96. What do you reckon, Ossie?
Yeah, I think it's clear for everyone to see. They look like they're having so much fun. And, sometimes that can, when you're playing with that freedom, ask any player, if you're playing free and you're not playing tense, most of the time when you have your best performances is when you felt free and you felt that you could just go and express yourself. And you can see that they're actually encouraged to do that. You've got someone like Jesse Lingard is probably the best example of that. He's got a smile on his face. He's allowed to be a bit of a joker and a clown around the place. And it's obviously good for the group because it relaxes everyone. Even Gareth Southgate falling over and hurting his shoulder, that all adds to just a more of a relaxed atmosphere. I've even heard one of the players said that they've been giving Southgate some banter about what happened to his shoulder. So they're really relaxed and they're focused and quietly confident in what they can do. And to be honest, it was a weird game seeing England win so convincingly, but I loved it. It was a beautiful hot day. It's about time that the national team, that we've got something to cheer for. So I'm all for it. Long may it continue for me.
What do you reckon, Cabs? Ossie's mentioned Gareth Southgate, he's not an old fella, and by that I mean he's not a Bobby Robson in at Italian Night, he's not Terry Venables at Euro 96, he's not Sven, he's not Capello, he's not of the old school, he's more like the front end of the new generation, so it seems that he can kind of relate to the youngsters, if that makes sense. What do you reckon?
Yeah, for sure. Yes, they haven't gone down the old route of you know, employing these, let's say, these old school managers. You know, the names you've mentioned there, they were, you know, a good few years on a lot of the players in the squad that they had there, you know, so Gareth Southgate also has had a lot of these boys, knows them personally, if not all of them, from the 21s. You know, I'm sure if you check the stats, I'm going to say at least 90% of them had played under Gareth before, you know, and he had known them, obviously being a manager, and, you know, like I said, being relevant in today's football world. I mean, I don't think they're going to call him by his first name as maybe Ray Parlour did, or make them jokes about him when he was up at Middlesbrough, but like I say, they can all relate to him, and I think they, like Bosse said as well, they're giving him them the freedom to play, you know. They're just happy. They're enjoying. They're loving life. And about the camaraderie in the squad, they're all around the same age. You know, I think Cahill might be the oldest. I don't know, is he 29, 30? You know, but the rest are in that early 20s, and some teenagers still in the squad. You know, Trent Arnold. So it's brilliant. They all know each other. They all probably dress the same, talk the same language, play the same games on Xbox or PS4, or around the golf as well. So, like you say, camaraderie off the pitch is massive. It also says you have a good changing room, good spirit, fighting for each other on the pitch. And also, I think, you know, we might be able to pick the 11. I've heard Gareth say as well that he trusts the whole squad to put any player in any given time. So that creates that, you know, that challenge for other players. You know they've got to stay on their toes, because if I don't play well, someone's going to come and take my place. You know, so I think that's great. But I don't think there's no animosity in that as well. You know, they know that the manager picks the team. You know, and if another player plays in your position, you're going to wish him all the best. It's tournament football. You got to wait for your opportunity. When that comes around, you take it, and hopefully you can stay in the team yourself. You know, it's brilliant, I think.
That's right. Now, the thing is, I watched this documentary, I'm sure you guys watched it as well, it was on the BBC, and it was about previous World Cup campaigns with the previous managers, and they interviewed them one by one, and they spoke to Sam Allardyce, and he seemed very, very bitter about what happened to him. He said, you know, it should have been me. I saw a clip of him on the internet earlier today. He was sitting in a pub eating a burger that he brought in himself, watching the England-Panama game. I think the dynamic of the squad would be much, much different if Sam Allardyce was in charge still, I reckon. I don't know what you guys think about it, but it just seems that I think he would have brought in a lot of the older players, to be fair. I don't think he'd have given youth that much of a chance. What would you reckon, Ossie?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think what Gareth Southgate's come in, I think he's been a breath of fresh air to everybody. I think it's unfair to say that England wouldn't have been not successful, because they haven't done anything yet, but I think England might have produced similar results, but I think the mood around the results is completely different. So, for example, England have been really good at set pieces in this tournament. They've looked at that as something that they can capitalise on. I think if it was an Allardyce team and they were scoring off all these set pieces, I think the reaction would be completely different. But because it's Southgate, he's been a breath of fresh air, he's been really clever and worked on the training field. Whereas if it was Allardyce, it would be, oh, look, he only plays for dead balls so he can score from set pieces. So I think Allardyce clearly is still bitter and wishes he was still in the job. But I think the whole mood around the England squad, I don't remember it ever being like this. I was talking at work today. I think this is my sixth World Cup I'm watching. And I know England have missed, I think, one in that time. But I don't ever remember the mood being as good as it has been ever. It's an amazing feel-good factor at the moment. And, you know, Euro 96 is probably the closest you can get to. At the moment, it feels like Euro 96. And I still remember that very fondly.
That's absolutely spot on, mate. I agree with you. And Cabs, let's talk about this current squad. You mentioned a lot of the youngsters, how they know each other very, very well. Apart from the media trolling Raheem Sterling, and I think it's become a bit of a game for him at the moment, who can actually come up with the most ludicrous story relating to Raheem Sterling. You know, Sterling and Lingard have formed a fantastic partnership. We saw with Lingard's goal, the joint celebration. I think it's absolutely fantastic that two players from rival clubs, let's be honest, and Raheem Sterling has played for Liverpool and Man City, so I guess there's that rivalry with Lingard. They get on like a house on fire.
Well, I think you just hit the nail on the head there. You know, you say rival clubs, but I think, again, like we've all, you know, alluded to that, when they're together in England, it's not, oh, you play for Man U, you play for Liverpool, we hate each other, or you play for Man United, you play for City, I'm not going to pass you in training, or you play for Tottenham, and you play for Chelsea, I can't stand you. They're in England, it's a tournament, they know, you know, they could have been going home, you know, in a couple of days if they hadn't won their games. When have we been in a situation where the media and everyone's talking about we might be able to rest some players, you know, two games in, you look at the table and you think, yeah, okay, they should be qualifying, but we've said that many a time, and we've gone out, you know, to teams that we shouldn't have, you know, noticeably Iceland, not belittling Iceland anyway in the last Euros, but, you know, for a nation that's not pouring out football in previous years, and we're supposed to be superior to those kind of nations, but it's 11 players on that day, it's the squad, you know, you need that camaraderie, and the boys, they're getting on well, you know, you say Rashford and Sterling are getting on, again, they're bringing out the best in each other, again, because that competition's there. If you don't play well, someone else is going to take my place, you know, it's not the old guard where you know Stevie G's going to play, Lampard is going to play, Scholes is going to play. You know, I'm just picking out those midfielders as we're talking about midfield. You know, there's people breathing down your neck. You've got Delph on the bench. You've got Loftus-Cheek coming in doing a great job. You've got Dyer there as well. Hasn't even touched the pitch yet. So they know there's players that are hot on their heels. Competition is brilliant. And, yeah, they look like they all get on. I don't think there's anything for the cameras. They all get on together. Like I say, they're around similar ages. They all know each other. All played against each other, and this young generation can stay together for a few more tournaments. If you look at it, you know, like I say, they're all quite young still, aren't they? So it bodes well for the future, I think. So long may it continue. And just to go back to what you were saying about Sam Allardyce, that's been a bit bitter. Yeah, of course. And, you know, he had one game in charge, I think it was. And, you know, for whatever reason, you know, the press got hold of some of the previous stuff he's done. You know, you just can't get away with anything these days. I say, trying to make Raheem Sterling a scapegoat, all these boys have just got to realise they can't do anything. You know, you look left, they should be looking right, they're going to pick up on it. But I think Raheem's done quite well, actually, just to, you know, keep his counsel, keep his head down, and I applaud Southgate for sticking with him. But for me, if it was me, I'm not the manager, but I'm saying the formation, I don't think really suits him. You know, we haven't really seen the City performances that he's been giving in and out every week. But the formation doesn't help him, I don't think. So I don't know, it might be something they need to look at, but Gareth's sticking with him at the minute. So the long way that continues, as long as we're getting the wins, keep it going, I say.
That's right. And also, you know a thing or two about defending. Panama's defending was woeful from set pieces. So I think it's actually good to see referees giving penalties for blatant shirt pulling, suplexes, and even side headlocks. What do you reckon?
I'll tell you what made me laugh. I think it was the second penalty where Kane's being dragged down and then the Panama guy slaps him on the back of the head just for good measure at the end.
No shame whatsoever.
I'm serious. I was actually watching it. And by that point, I was actually getting annoyed and frustrated because I was thinking, you're actually embarrassing your whole country. It's like you don't know what the rules are. It's like you didn't know there's a video assistant referee. It's like you don't know you're not allowed to pull shirts in the box. It's like they hadn't got the memo, and it was a bit embarrassing at the end. So as much as, you know, it was great to see England score all of those goals, Panama's defending, It was a joke, really. It was amateurish, and they let the country down in that first half, because England didn't need to do a lot to get the goals that they did. Obviously, Lingard's goal aside, you know, it was... I saw something on Twitter, someone said it was like year 11s playing against year 7. It was a joke.
No, I agree, mate. I agree. Yeah. Steve, I highly doubt many people would have bet against Harry Kane being among the top goal scorers at this stage of the competition, given the teams he played against. He's a complete striker, isn't he?
I'm a big Arsenal fan, as is Ossie, but, you know, and I was a striker as well, so obviously I'm looking closely at the strikers, you know. But you just got to applaud him, because I just think he's one of these players that is... You can see he works on his game. He's dedicated to his game. He works on his weaknesses, and he works... I'm a big believer in working on both. You know, people say work on your weaknesses, but why wouldn't you work on your strengths and improve your strengths and, you know, be even better at that? But, yeah, of course, work on your weaknesses. But if you was to ask a lot of people what is Harry Kane's strengths or what is his main attribute... I'm still thinking now, I'm not even quite sure.
Goals.
He's quite good at everything.
Goals.
He scores goals, and that's the hardest thing to do in football. You know, I think before this World Cup, he hadn't scored in a major competition. I'm not sure. I think I read that somewhere. But it's in the first game, he's come on. He's got a brace, and now he's got a hat-trick. You know, I wish that third goal had gone in off a Panama player. Not to take the hat-trick away from him, just so Loftus Cheek could have gotten the score sheet as well, you know, but he scores goals, Harry. You know, people saying he can drop in and be at number 10 or a 9.5, they like to call it in Holland. But I think it's good in the air. I think his hold-up play could be a bit better, if I'm being overcritical. And he's never going to be rapid, but he gets in right positions. And his ball striking is brilliant. So, and he's, Tottenham say he's one of our own, but at the minute he's one of everyone's own in England, because he's leading the way, and hopefully he can stay fit and keep scoring goals, because as long as he's scoring goals, it looks good for England. So keep going, Kane, I say.
No, that's right. Do you know, the one thing I've noticed about Harry Kane is that his movement in the box is phenomenal, especially when he peels off the defender's shoulder and goes to the back stick. He's absolutely clinical. Yeah. Sorry to mention it, mate. Sorry. Obviously, Lingard scored a worldie. We've mentioned that already. But England had an unlikely goal scorer in John Stones. Two goals for the City defender, both from set pieces. There's a lot more to his game than just playing the ball out of defence, isn't there?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's to be honest, I've not seen him attack the ball like that in the Premier League. Maybe I've not been watching the game. I've not seen, he's not only, you know, he's powering headers through. And obviously, he'll be delighted to have scored the two goals, because, you know, to score a goal from a set piece, they're not easy goals, of course, but in terms of having to score in free play, it's a lot easier than scoring in free play, scoring from a set piece. So I think he's had a tough season. He started off the season doing reasonably well. Everyone was saying how much he'd improved. And then he sort of got bombed out a bit towards the end. So I think he's shown great attitude. He's obviously impressed the manager. The manager believes in him. And again, they've worked on these set pieces, and they've decided, listen, guys, this is a way that we can score easy goals. And whether it's Stones, whether it's Maguire, whether it's Cahill when he plays, they got some big boys in there. The delivery from Trippier has been very good. And I think it's good that Stones can show other aspects of his game. I would like to have thought of myself as a ball-playing defender in my time. But I think Stones has shown that he does need to show a little bit more than that. You've got to do the other side. And as much as people don't like that, if you look at your likes of Sergio Ramos, say what you want about him, the guy's a born winner. He'll do anything to get... for his team, and I think Stones needs to show a bit more of that ruthlessness. Ramos pops up with important goals all the time. Stones has popped up with two important goals, and if he gets a bit nastier, as they say in the game, then I think he can get back in that City side and fulfil his potential, because I think at the moment he's still potential.
No, I agree with you, mate, absolutely. I think he's got all the potential to be one of the best, to be fair. And that's not just saying because he scored twice against Panama. He's got a lot in his locker. But speaking of this current England side, you know, forgive me for being pessimistic, but I'm not convinced they'll actually get past the quarterfinals, purely because I think there are a lot of mistakes in that back line. I mean, I look at Kyle Walker playing at centre half. I think he's got a few mistakes in him. His pace obviously helps when he does make that mistake because he can catch up. But do you guys think that Southgate would change his system the further England progress? Because he's focused on this 3-4-2-1 formation. Do you think he's going to keep it the same or change it?
No, I think he'll keep it the same. Yeah? Just for the fact that, you know, you've got three at the back, but that can easily turn into a five in the back. I know that sounds very defensive, but some games you have to defend. You know, whether it is you defend for 90 minutes and you get that goal in injury time, or you get that goal and you might revert, but you might change it during the game as well. You know, football's about tactics as well. You need to be a tactician as well. Say what you want about your boss, Jose. He's a tactician at the end of the day. He will win a game ugly and dirty. Just going back to what I was saying as well, for sure, Stones has got to be a bit more aggressive as Harry Maguire. If you watch Harry Maguire, he's not bad on the ball. He takes risks as well, but he's very, very good in the air. Maybe it's his timing or he's just more aggressive. But Stones, I think, doesn't play at Man City as much because you've got someone like Otamendi who is inches smaller than him, but the way he attacks the ball, and he's, as a centre-half, you've got to be good in both boxes, just like a centre-forward. As you get called back to defend corners, and you've got to attack the ball in the opposition's box as well. Same as centre-half, you've got to be good in both boxes. Otamendi, I think, scored about 5-6 goals. I know that because I didn't want my dream team most of the season, so I know that. So Stones, yeah, great for him to get 2 goals, get off the mark, and got to just be a bit more. I think sometimes the boys at the back, you mentioned Kyle Walker, you've got 3 centre-halves there. No, Kyle Walker's not centre-half, but they all want to get forward, don't they? Yeah. Someone's got to command it and say, you know what, listen, you ain't going nowhere. You think Tony Adams is letting Lee Dixon bomb up the wing? You know, Gary Pallas, Steve Bruce is saying, listen, no, none of that. Come and sit in here. You ain't going nowhere. You know, John Terry is telling Ashley Cole, listen, you ain't going up there. You come and just defend here. Because if you go and keep bombing on, I think that's why they've got the 3 at the back. But there's still going to be gaps there because Kyle Walker likes to bomb on. We've seen him go on. Maguire likes to go on a dribble, get caught on the ball. We've seen Stones do it as well. So I guess against a better team opposition, you can't give away the ball as much as they've done it against other teams because they will punish you. So I think that's what they've got to be a bit wary of. But I think if they play a better team as the competition goes on, I think he might even revert to maybe 2 holding centre mids. You know, he might even throw Dier in there, you know, in place of one of the more attacking midfielders. So Dier and Henderson in front of the back four. Therefore, the full-back, the wing-back, can still get forward. You've got still like-minded defenders that want to defend back there with Henderson and Dier in there as well, I think. We'll see.
Ossie, what do you reckon, mate? Because I'm looking at that back line and I see Ashley Young at left wing back, and yeah, he did a job at United the back end of this season. You know, Danny Rose came on, didn't really do too much, but you know, he hasn't played that many games recently, so you can't really, you know, slate him for that. I get the feeling that as the tournament goes on and England go further into the competition, I think Danny Rose will replace Ashley Young. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think England have done very well so far. I think, you know, they've done everything that's been asked of them and everyone's really happy with them. But I think Belgium would be a good indicator of where England are really at. You know, their confidence is high. You know, they'll feel that they're in the competition and they're ready to play the big boys. Belgium would be a little bit like a derby game because everyone knows each other. A lot of English-based players in the Belgian squad. So it'd be a good game to watch. And tactically, it'll be interesting to see what England do, because I agree, I'm looking at the left side of the England team at the moment. I'm looking at Maguire, left-sided, right-footed defender, Ashley Young, left-sided, right-footed wing-back. And I just think that teams will set traps, better teams will set traps against that sort of player playing out of position, so to speak, or playing on their wrong side. And they'll just set you up and expose you. Don't think Harry Maguire wants to go out into that left channel and have someone running at him. I don't think Ashley Young wants to get closed down on that on his left foot or even on his right foot and have to be forced to play back all the time. And I just think as good as they've been so far, I think they need a test now. I think Belgium's a good test. They're both through to the next stage. But as I said, I think the better teams tactically, they'll have something up their sleeve for England. And it will be interesting to see how England respond Cab said about two central holding midfielders, I think that's a logical conclusion to throw two bodies in there. But I think you need a specialist on that left side as the tournament progresses. I don't know if Danny Rose is ready, but I think Danny Rose needs to get in at some point. Kyle Walker, I think Cabs is right. I think he's got a mistake in him. He can recover, but he doesn't know the position inside out yet. And at the highest level, it only takes one slip, like he did in the first game, and you can make a blunder that you can't recover from. One positive, you've got Harry Kane. So you'd like to think that to beat England, you have to score two goals. A little bit like with Portugal. To beat Portugal, you have to score two goals because Cristiano Ronaldo more than likely is going to score. So I'm looking forward to the Belgian game. I think that's a good indicator.
I think Tunisia was a test for the mental strength, because it was how long can you carry on and continuously miss chances and not let that get to you. And we saw, obviously, with the injury time winner, it's fantastic. But the thing is, when they come across a team that has got a winning mentality, that's got winners all over the pitch, players that have done it at the highest level, I think that extra bit of experience will be England's undoing because of who they've got. I know that Stones has won the title with City, but he wasn't really a regular, was he? Kyle Walker, as you said, not used to that centre-back position. The other fella, Maguire, again, I'm still not convinced by him. And then obviously you got Jordan Henderson, who's been fantastic in this competition. I mean, Leon Knight, he said he's been one of his best players, and I tend to agree with him. I'm saying it with gritted teeth as a United fan. I think Henderson's been fantastic, but again, I think it goes back to the mental strength, and when it comes to that little bit of experience, the naivety will start showing. But let's see, it's been a good campaign so far. They've done what they've been asked or what's been expected, so you can't really say too much. But let's move over to Group H, where there's three teams who stand the chance of qualifying, as Colombia, my boys, bounce back from their 2-1 opening game defeat to Japan to beat Poland 3-0, while Senegal were held 2-2 by Colombia's conquerors, Japan. Obviously, Japan have come into the competition with a nothing-to-lose attitude. They changed their head coach a few months ago, and he recalled Honda, who happened to grab their equaliser yesterday. A win against Poland will see them get out of the group. How much of a surprise will this be?
It's a funny one, because I think those players, they're so, by and large, unknown. Playing in that heat probably suits them more. It's very hot at the moment, and they're just so sharp and unpredictable. It's difficult to nail them down. And I think some countries will play against some of those players and look at them physically. They'd be very slight and not very physical, but they're quick and they're technical. And if you're not at it 100%, they can do you. And the fact that it's so hot, it's going to affect your ability to get around the pitch, but it doesn't affect the Japanese. I saw I watched the Senegal game yesterday, and Senegal will be kicking themselves, but the Japanese, they just don't stop. They're just relentless. And as you say, they're playing with this never say die attitude. Poland are not in good shape at all. So it's all there for them, and I think they'll be licking their lips.
No, I agree, mate. I agree. Steve, all Senegal have to do is avoid defeat, and they also qualify. Can you see them shine up shop, or will we see the expansive Senegal which we're used to seeing against Colombia?
I don't know if they've got that in them, to be honest. I think you think so, but I think it's very hard to have that preconceived thought about what you're going to do in a game, because, as you know, no two games are ever the same. You want to go for one result. If it's not an over positive result, which is winning, obviously, I think if you go into every game with the mentality to win, it's very hard to play a game. Play for a draw. People say, I don't know how people do that. That mentality is just too hard. I think they've got to go for the win. Of course, they've got to have game management. If they're winning 1-0 or they're winning 2-0, then they keep going gun ho and keep attacking. They've got to be sensible about these things. But I think go for the win, get your goals, and then reassess how the game is going. That's what my plan would be. I'm no coach, I'm not no manager, but for me, as a former player, I couldn't really think about going out to not get beat or go for a draw. I'm going to win at the end of the day, and I just hope all my teammates will be doing the same thing.
That's right. And when you look at Colombia yesterday, they were
just keep them in the competition.
they were all guns blazing yesterday, weren't they, mate? The thing is, this is a team that had so much heart, desire. I know Poland were absolutely pony, but you can only beat what's in front of you. And when you look at that quartet in Quintero, Cuadrado, James Rodriguez, Falcao, they all stepped up again. They really put Poland to the sword. Now, just I'm asking you both this question. Colombia are very, very dangerous, especially when these players are in top form. Do you think they'll get the win that they need to get them through?
Listen, I think they are on fire at the minute. You've got Bakker on the bench as well, can come in and take over from Falcao as well. James pulling strings. You know, this is where he made his name, 4 years ago, I think it was, and then Real Madrid bought him. Quintero's doing bits. They've got some very, very good attacking players. And you can just see the energy that they play with. You know, even it's just beaming off them, even from their own fans. You know, the bright yellow kit, Valderrama's here, you see him in the crowd. They're just buzzing. I think they'll get the win, if I'm honest. And if I was England, I wouldn't want to be playing Colombia next. Because I just think technically they're good. I'm not sure if Jose was talking about Colombia before, was talking about Japan, wasn't he, about the heat. They can deal with the heat, you know, coming from where they're coming from. It's not going to affect them. Even if it's a night game, it's still quite, tasty out there with the heat. So they're ready, and they were ratting around Poland yesterday. England are a better outfit than Poland, yeah, for sure. But I just think Colombia have got that quality as well. They've got that Sanchez at the back from Tottenham as well. He gives you a chance, but he's quite quick. But I think they've got some very good players. I think they could be the underdogs, actually, Colombia. I think they could go quite far in this competition. I like the look of them. Quite balanced as well. And I'd say they've got boys on the bench that can come on and do well as well, as in Bakker, can score goals. Falcao, the old dog, he's very wise. He knows what he's doing out there. And they've got the legs, Quintero and Rodriguez. Yeah, good players. Mm. I like the look.
Obviously, the one thing I admire most about Colombia is that it's their defending is so erratic, right? But they're no nonsense. There have been so many occasions, especially in the Poland game, where the ball will bounce and they'll be first to it. There's no second ball. They're getting rid of it. They don't care where it goes. If in doubt, get it out. And I think it's just that this streetwise attitude that they have that can really help them get them over the line, so to speak. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's been a feature of quite a few of the South American teams, especially some of the more inexperienced nations. Costa Rica, these teams that you can tell they're starving hungry, and you know they're not interested in giving anyone an inch, even though you know we hammered Panama for their defending, which was shocking, but their attitude is, I don't care what I have to do, you're not scoring. They obviously got it completely wrong, but the South American mentality is, you know, they're starving hungry, they're doing it for their people. Colombia, their tails are up, but they've also got amazing quality as well, and I think they feel that they've got a point to prove. Argentina have been stuttering, Brazil have been stuttering. You know, their team talk for me is kind of done. You know, go and show that we're the best South American nation. Let's go with our quality. We can go and beat anybody. With our hunger, we can outfight anybody. And with our never say die attitude, we can keep going. So that's all the ingredients that you need to go win football matches. So, you know, for me, they're a very dangerous team. And as Cav said, they're also capable of blitzing you very quickly with their fitness and their quality and technique. They could easily score two or three goals. And then what are you going to do? Do you know what I mean? So they're a team that you don't want to face when their tails are up and when they're in the mood that they're in at the moment.
That's right. And that's a perfect segue to my next topic of discussion. That's Uruguay, another team that's able to score two or three, as they did today against Russia. They beat them 3-0. Finished top of the group, and in the wooden spoon race, I like to call it, Saudi Arabia inflicted further misery on Mo Salah and Egypt with a 2-1 win. Cabs, I didn't watch the Saudi Arabia-Egypt game, so I can't really comment on the performance from either team, but the result pretty much sums up their campaign, Egypt's, really. Dire and too much reliance on a player who, let's be honest, looked very disinterested this game. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, you expect better from Egypt. You know, they've been around, World Cups before. They normally do well in the African nations, North African team. You expected them to have a better showing, really. But maybe they were too heavily reliant on Salah. I did hear, however much it's true, you don't know, but there's a lot of politics going on, as there is probably in a lot of these countries, but a lot of politics. Mo Salah saying he's not going to play again for Egypt after this tournament. So I don't know if that had any bearing on the game and how the players approached it. You know, so that, I think they were pretty poor. So they'll be going home. But just to go back to, we haven't spoken about Mexico. Mexico are another team who look like they're on it. They're starving. They are hungry. I wouldn't want to be playing them either. You know, so there's some good teams that are showing up, actually. You know, it's the teams that we're expecting to show up, you know, the Argentinians, the Brazilians, they haven't really shown up but yet. And the Germans, they're still in the competition, aren't they? You know, sooner or later, they're going to hit some form, one or two of these teams, and one of those two, three teams will get to the semis and the finals. But yeah, Egypt, it's time for them to go home and maybe rethink, restructure how they're going to get into the next World Cup, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Do you know, it's so interesting how this nation or this team has regressed in the past few months. I mean, you're spot on about what you said about Mo Salah. We spoke about it last two shows ago, where, you know, we got wind that Salah was unhappy with the Egypt FA because of the way that they prepared the team, having a lot of celebrities from Egypt in the same hotel as them, a lot of distractions. It was absolutely crazy. And the thing is, there's a lot of fanfare going around Mo Salah. You know, take Mo Salah out of Egypt and no one really pays too much attention. So it's kind of self-inflicted, really, with Mo Salah. He's the victim of his own success, if you want to think about it. And to be fair, and again, this is not me having my Man United hat on, I think him falling out or getting injured in that Champions League final and him not being able to return on the pitch and being more focused on the World Cup has backfired, really. But yeah, you know, Hector Cooper is a fantastic head coach. He, as you mentioned earlier, they did very well in the Africa Cup of Nations. So to see the team regress like that in a short space of time, there's obviously something fundamentally wrong in the camp. But let's talk quickly about Uruguay, Ossie, because this is three clean sheets on the bounce for them. I know the quality of their opponents has been piss poor, to say the least, but they've gone about their business quietly, though, and Cavani must be a relieved man after finally opening his account for the tournament.
Yeah, well, again, we spoke about the South American nations. Uruguay, they're a good team. They have been a good team for several years now. They've got, you know, arguably the best number nine in the world in Suarez. So they're going to score. Again, it's another team you're going to have to score a couple of goals against to beat them, because you'd like to think Suarez or Cavani are going to score, and that makes it very difficult. What you're hoping for in the group stages is that you can win games and play your way into the tournament, and they're in the tournament. There are some teams that, you know, they're still trying to find their way, the Germans, the Brazilians, you know, they're there but they're not really there. Uruguay, I think they'll be looking around thinking, you know what, you know, we'll face anyone at the moment. So it's good to see. I think Uruguay, the great footballing nation, a lot of people don't know their history in terms of winning World Cups. And they deserve to have some success, and they've got the players to make a mark on the tournament. They're stingy in terms of letting in goals. And in this tournament, defending, you know, people have conceded a lot of late goals, but, you know, not conceding goals is a great habit to have, especially when you've got those two up front.
That's right, and the thing is, I know they've been wasteful in front of goal, but it's a similar situation with Brazil in the sense that at least they are creating chances. If they weren't creating chances, then there'd be a problem. But Cavani's missed a few, Suarez has missed a few, and it just seems like they're warming up at the moment. And, you know, the next round that they face Portugal, which we're going to go into in just a moment, they face Portugal, and let's be honest, that their back line isn't particularly great at the moment.
Nice. So, you know, really, for me, the tournament starts in the knockout phase now. Mm-hmm. I think this World Cup's been a bit of a slow burner so far, but now it's time to, you know, put your money where your mouth is. And as I say, Uruguay, they're well placed. I think Portugal are a bit dodgy. I think Uruguay probably go into that as slight favourites. But yeah, looking forward to the game, and To be honest, I don't mind either team going through. They're good football nations, good teams, and yeah, looking forward to it.
That's right. Right, on to the last two games. I haven't done much of a script for this one, so pardon me if there's a lot of umming and ahhing. I don't particularly know where to start, to be fair. The Portugal game was full of controversy. Alan Shearer called it a farce. I call it a vase, because VAR was practically involved in every incident, apart from Quaresma's beautiful goal, which is textbook Quaresma, outside of the right boot, edge of the box, no chance for the goalkeeper. Ossie, I know you didn't get the chance to watch this game. Cabs, have you seen any highlights of this one, or have you seen any of the incidents?
Yeah, I saw a few of the incidents. I didn't watch the game because it was on simultaneously with the Spanish game, and that's the game I chose to watch. But yeah, I saw Quaresma's goal. I think they said that's his first goal, or his first tournament, actually, World Cup for Portugal. So, and he's been around for a long time, so happy for him to get a sublime goal. Keeper had no chance. I think there was a lot of VAR involved. I think, was it two penalties that were given? Cristiano's penalty was given. I didn't think he had full control of the ball, if I'm honest, but the player did get in his way and the legs did get tangled, so I can see why they gave it. But I don't think I would have given it if I was a referee, because like I said, he didn't look like he had full control of the ball. Some people say justice was done because he missed the penalty. It was actually quite strange, actually. I've never seen this before. The goalkeeper stood behind the line, so he was actually in the goal, so I'm not sure if that had any bearing on Ronaldo, you know, the great player he is. You wouldn't have thought so. Just keeper guessed the right way and he saved the penalty. Keeper jumped out off his line and saved it. What was the other penalty?
Handball.
The other penalty.
The handball.
VAR again involved. Handball. Was it a bit ball to hand?
Well, this is the thing, because if you cast your mind back to the Australia-Denmark game, for me, that's not a penalty. The man isn't even looking at the ball. You can't say it's in unnatural position, because how else are you going to jump if you don't raise your hands? And it's not as if his hands were fully in the air. They were basically at like a what kind of angle was that? Is that 180 degree? I don't even know. But, you know, it's ridiculous.
The VAR, you know, as soon as the referees are not sure, they're going to use that and try and utilise it as much as possible, aren't they? And as we see, they're not always going to get the right answer. You know, it's a subjective opinion, isn't it?
No, I agree, but
they've scored the penalty, really. So I mean, you have to move on after they've gone and looked at the video and they've given it. There's actually no comeback from it, is there? You know, because they've stopped the game, took the time to have a look at the goal, at the penalty, should I say, or the incident, and they've given the goal.
You see, this is the thing. I know referees will give certain decisions, and it's the inconsistencies that we talk about time and time again about referees. But again, how do you justify handball? I mean, we know the deliberate one, which is Colombia against Japan. So you can differentiate that. You can say, yeah, that was a blatant handball. He deserves a red card. But Cedric's handball today, again, the ball has hit his hand, and his hand was like at a 45 degree angle. I cannot understand. The referee's looked at it. He hasn't given it. He's then gone to VAR and he's seen it again, and he's watched it again. He's watched it again, and then he's decided to give it. But for me, it just appears that every time VAR is implemented, the referees feel obliged to give that decision. I'd be interested to know if this referee from Paraguay would have given that in the Paraguayan league, for example. I don't know. It just seems that, okay, VAR will always bring in talking points. People always say to me, like my mate Jan Uguko, to me, he says, oh, it's going to take the talking points out of the game or whatnot. Well, no, it's only created more talking points, hasn't it? But it just seems extremely, extremely weird to me how, you know, these handball decisions are being given all the time. It's shocking. You might as well be playing FIFA, to be honest. But the other thing that I found absolutely shocking was the amount of players that were rolling around as if they'd been shot. It was appalling, absolutely appalling.
Nothing new there, though, is there, to be honest.
Fair enough. Ronaldo's penalty miss wasn't a great penalty. It was a right height for the goalkeeper. Quaresma's goal is quality. Iran almost won it at the end. They had that chance. It was 1-1. He's put it in the side netting. I said a couple of days ago that it would have been one of the biggest shocks if they had beaten Portugal, and I gave them the hope because of the performance they played against Spain. They'll be kicking themselves, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, that was the golden opportunity. You know, know, that's football. 1 minute you lose in, next minute you draw in, and 5 minutes later you could be winning the game, you know, and going through and knocking one of the other teams out. So that's football. You've got to take your chances when they come. It's all about opportunities. When the opportunity comes in life, you've got to take it.
That's right, that's right. Talk to me about the Spain game, because I didn't watch that one. I know Spain had fallen behind once, they equalised, and then they fell behind again, and then they equalised thanks to VAR.
They haven't hit top form yet, you know, as also you said before. You know, some of these nations haven't hit the top form yet, but they're still in the competition. You know, Costa up front, he's a bit starved, really. I think watching Spain today, it also reminded me of maybe like an Arsenal team, or a Barcelona team without the Messi, where they're passing, they've got no one to really finish it off. I mean, Costa was playing, but he was starved. I mean, there was periods in the game where I thought, he hasn't touched the ball for about 5-10 minutes there. And that's a long time in football, you know, for a striker as well. You're making consistent and numerous runs. And they were decent runs as well. I say consistent, good runs, and just not getting the ball, because, you know, David Silva's keeping it. Isco's goal was very good. Iniesta, those, and then they had Thiago there, and at the bottom of that you had Busquets. So those boys alone, they can keep the ball, you know. Sometimes I think they need to move it a bit quicker, and because, you know, the opposition was getting behind the ball very quickly, and one or two passes, they're back in shape, couldn't really break them down really. And it was a bit of sublime skill from, I think it was Iniesta and Isco, you know, that opened them up eventually and got the goal.
That's right, and it was Iago Aspas that got the equaliser in the 91st minute.
And that went to VAR itself, you know, they said he was offside. Flag went straight up, but I'm not sure if someone spoke to the ref, you know, for his headphones, saying, "Let's, you go and check VAR," or because the Spanish players were surrounding the referee saying, "Look, that's not offside." So they went to VAR, took a bit of a while actually to get the right answer, but I think they got the correct one in the end. Yeah. And it was onside, a very good finish actually from Aspas.
So effectively we can agree that today VAR has, well, should I say in these two games, VAR has got 1.5 right out of 3. Because I could pretty much say the Ronaldo one was like a half and half, really. Ossie, while we're on the subject of Spain, you know, Cabs mentioned Diego Costa being starved. I know Iago Aspas came on to score that equaliser, but I don't know, without Diego Costa, they look very toothless. And without Isco pulling the strings, they're lacking, I wouldn't say they're lacking that creativity, but the others don't seem to be pulling their weight at the moment. I know it's early days, but, you know, do you fear for Spain a bit?
You know what, I don't. Like, I agree that Costa is a bit starved, and at times Spain can get caught into that rhythm of just pass, and where are we going? But if you look throughout the team, they're just winners everywhere you look. Like, they know how to get the job done. I was looking at the back four today, you know, Pique, Ramos, Alaba, Carvajal. Like, everywhere you look, there's quality. The midfield, Iniesta, Busquets. Can't remember who else is in there. Isco,
they've got Saul Niguez that can come on.
They know how to get the job done. So yeah, you know, in tight games, I still back them to just create that one chance where they can get that goal. And as I said, for me, I just don't think the World Cup has lit up yet, and I think there's more to come for them. And as it comes to the knockout stages, teams will have to come out more. You've got no choice. Because you have to score a goal if you want to win. Take a little bit of a risk, and players are going to have to perhaps not track back to get the ball back on the counter-attack in a higher position up the pitch. So I'm not worried about them. I don't think the World Cup's really started yet. And I think, you know, their team knows how to get the job done. So I'd like to think that they're going to get to the latter stages and then see what happens from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, Spain face Russia in the last 16. And Portugal face Uruguay. Cabs, Ossie, tell me, how do you think these games are going to go?
Spain to get through. And is it Portugal versus Uruguay?
Yep.
Yeah, like Ossie said, now the competition starts, you know, knockout stages, nowhere to hide. You either come prepared or you're looking, you're going home. You know Ronaldo's going to be prepared. It's just whether the rest of the 10, 12 players that get on that pitch with him are going to be ready and can help him as well, because he can't do it every time by himself. I think that's too much to ask. Whereas Uruguay, we've already spoken about them. They've got winners, and they're starving. And I don't think they've conceded a goal, maybe one, if any. Now they've got Dean at the back, who is solid for Atletico. You know, they've got players that can score goals in Cavani, Suarez. They've got some real good players. So I think that's going to be the interesting game. I think Russia, I was going to say they can go home, but they are home, aren't they? So I think Spain's going to deal with them. I really do think Spain's going to deal with them. They're going to start stepping it up. But I think for me, I'm going to say Uruguay are going to go through. Uruguay and Spain for me.
Mm-hmm. Jose?
I've got such a soft spot for Cristiano. I did say earlier I don't mind who goes through, but actually if I have to choose I want Portugal to go through, because I just think the man has just done so much for the game, and the amount of people still question him, I just think it's a joke, it's just embarrassing, and I'd like to see him lift the World Cup one day, and it has to be this year, otherwise he's probably not going to do it. And Spain, I think there are no easy games, but I think that's, I'd be shocked if they didn't win that game. I'll go Portugal and Spain.
It's going to be an interesting game, as you both have said. And, you know, Godín, you've got Jimenez at the back, the two central defenders from Atletico Madrid. But I just think when you look at someone like Pepe at the back, I think Pepe with hair is worse than Pepe without hair. Suarez can really wind him up. In fact, just watching them two winding each other up would be fantastic. Cavani, I think there's a lot more to come from him. I think he's very, very underrated. It'll be a fantastic game. Again, without Cristiano Ronaldo, I think Portugal don't stand a hope in hell, really. So they need him to be in top form. They can't afford to get him all frustrated like he was today. Again, he was lucky not to get sent off today, to be fair. He aimed an elbow at the Iran defender, and I actually thought the referee was going to give a red. And VAR again took a look at it, and he's only booked him, so he's got away with that. You're going to miss that game. So, yeah, it's exciting times. Exciting times indeed. And that's it. That is it for our show. Gentlemen, thank you ever so much for your time. Really appreciate you both coming on. Before I let you guys go, Twitter handles. Cabs, I know that you're quite active on it now. You disappeared in the wilderness for a bit, but now you're back on Twitter.
That's why you got back in touch with me. You saw me tweeting at like 6 in the morning.
What? I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's right. Before I was out, that's right. I'm still relevant, man. Just go and tweet on Instagram. I'm out here. I'm just working.
Okay.
But you know my handle anyway. SG Cabra. I'll reply when I can.
Excellent. What's that?
Big time, Kappa. What's wrong with him?
Try when he can. What do you mean?
All my handles are the same. Osei Sankofa.
Excellent. Thank you very much, gents. Thank you for your time. It's been a great show. I hope to have you guys back on again very, very soon. Those of you still listening, we have a Twitter handle at Shoot the Fence. We have a Facebook group page. You can listen to us on iTunes, FNX Network, Acast, Audio Boom. I don't think there's a platform that we're not on. That's pretty much it. So until next time, take care.